with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
For the first time in 2025, we say hello, Shayna Goldman from The Athletic, and happy new year. How are you?
I'm great now that I'm here. I mean, my year is officially made.
Ah, well, now the hard questions. Should Buffalo be pursuing? Should anybody be pursuing? This is how we left the conversation with Darren Dreger. Elias Pettersson of Vancouver, like, what's his value right now? And should somebody be really knocking on the door in Vancouver to pry him out of there? No?
No, no one should want him because, you know, he doesn't care enough. Right.
Oh, okay. You're starting the year with some sarcasm. I was like, oh my gosh. I kept saying yesterday, yes, yes, yes. And now Shayna's knocking me down. What's going on?
No, yes. They should. Every single person, every team. And it's like, this is the funny thing. Whenever you hear a player's name on the market, and I'm sure we've talked about this, there are those like levels of interest, right? It's like, is a team kicking the tires? Are they actually pursuing them? When a player like Elias Pettersson is available, you should be kicking the tires. If a player like Elias Pettersson is not on the market, kick the tires in the off chance you can get this home run trade, right? He's such a good player, and I know he's been a little bit inconsistent, right? We all thought he was hurt in the postseason last year, and then when Tocchet stressed that he wasn't, it's like, okay, what's the deal then? Where is your shot? Where are your passes? But I think he has true star power. He's a true first-line center. Teams pay a lot of money to have iffy and mid-third-line centers at the deadline. If you can get a real 1C, you should be jumping at it, even with the contract.
Okay, when you look at NHL Edge stats, and that's available for everybody, his burst of speeds, right? They look at burst over 22 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour, top speed and all that. It has dropped off a lot in the last 2 years. Is it, you talked about Rick Tocchet, like, is it Rick Tocchet's system that has slowed down Elias Pettersson, or is it Elias Pettersson, who's only 26? He can't have slowed down physically. Like, is this a systematic issue or a coach issue with Pettersson?
Yeah, I wonder if it is, because it's not like he's had slow line mates either, right? Like last year he had Ilya Mikheyev, who should have never been a top liner for all of the reasons, but had the speed to keep up, right? And Jake DeBrusk brings some speed and some energy off the rush. So I would think it's either systems or maybe his workload. I feel like he focuses a lot on the defense, and that's a great thing to have, right? In a perfect world, every center is a good two-way player and is a good defensive player. And I know every coach wants to see that. But I do wonder sometimes if there's too much emphasis on his defense that maybe is slowing him down a little bit, because we see as the defense gets better, sometimes it's weighing on his offense.
I do think there were times last year where he had less than elite line mates, and it really did drag him down. And Mikheyev was not whatever Mikheyev once was, and he only recently with Chicago did he say that he actually got back to full speed based on having the previous knee injury. So these are things that, you know, whether it's splitting hairs, whatever, clearly Pettersson was not what he was before, but I also don't think he was in a great situation last year. This year, who knows? I mean, it just seems like it's a strange year in Vancouver for any number of reasons. And now Marty Demko, you know, gets dinged up again last night. Lankinen comes in. JT Miller emerges as the hero in the shootout. Like, it's, man, it's like a drama that was written by you, Shayna.
I know. I love it. Oh, my God. I could eat this up every day. Give me all the Canucks drama. It's like the perfect organization to have the drama to. Like, I feel like these Canadian franchises like Vancouver, Toronto, and Edmonton amp it up to a level that I absolutely love. And the drama never stops giving in Vancouver right now. The situation, you know, the press conferences for Pettersson and Miller, and then all the rumors coming out, it's too much. The Demko situation is the one part I don't want to see, right? Like, I don't want to see the best players injured, because I think it's such a great story. He's been back. He's been really good. And I think that was going to work out for him and Lankinen. I think Lankinen, you know, his last couple games hasn't been as strong. He's been solid. He gave his team, I think he's had two quality starts in his last three games, but he doesn't have wins. But I think the more he starts, the better rhythm he's going to get into. But I understand why they were leaning on Demko a little bit more. But it felt like they had the pieces to really build on last season, and it just hasn't happened. And some of it's bad luck, and then some of it's their own making, because they can't get out of their own way with the drama.
Alex Ovechkin is at 871. We joked the other day, well, Duffer did, and I supported the joke, that Alexei Protas should be suspended and fined for scoring an empty net goal and not looking for Ovechkin while on the ice to give him a no, but he doesn't need him. He's at 871. He's 24 goals away from passing Wayne Gretzky. He's on pace to do it in February. Does he do it this year? And how amazing is his return, knowing that he keeps scoring after having that broken leg?
Yeah, this is why Protas and Ovechkin are separated, because they're like, we can't have you on the same line if you're not going to set him up for those empty netters. But no,
was the suspension. You can't play with him.
Yeah, sorry, go to the second line. Although that second line is completely crushing it. Like, Pierre-Luc Dubois, the glow up in Washington is real. But what Ovechkin's doing is incredible, because when we looked at the early goings of the season, it was like, is he going to hit the record? It would probably be early next season, not this year, because it wasn't the same as like last season start, right? Which was as cold as it comes. But you looked at it and you were like, well, the shooting is down a little bit. The shot quality is down a little bit. He doesn't have a lot of shooting luck. It just isn't perfectly working. And then all of a sudden it started clicking, right? And the Capitals hit their stride and he was killing it. And he's killing it at 5-on-5, because the power play before he got hurt was a little bit inconsistent. They found their groove a little bit after, with Jacob Chychrun stepping up to shoot the puck a bit more. But I mean, everything and more is happening when he's on the ice, and you're seeing him be a good player 5-on-5, a little uncharacteristic. You're seeing Dylan Strome show what a true 1C he is and setting him up a lot. And I think it's all just working. Like, are there some kinks to work out in Washington now that he's healthy, especially with all the other lines outside of the second? Yes, but it does feel like he is going to hit that record this year the way he's scoring. It is so unbelievable that he just has picked up where he left off. And yes, it starts with an empty net goal. And yes, last night's a power play goal. But those goals matter too, right? They all kind of like fill into that same big picture, even if they're not as impressive as, I don't know, scoring all of them at 5-on-5.
Allow me to play the role of idiot. I will say he will not break the record this year. This is the same idiot who hung his hat on Georgiev not too long ago.
Yeah.
But the good news is it has opened the door for Askarov to play more in San Jose, and we are all here for that, including his impressive win over Tampa last night.
So. And what a game that was. The late games last night seriously brought it. I mean, we had so much action. You see Seattle's comeback win. You see the Sharks taking it to Tampa Bay. Obviously, they lose to Victor Hedman. That's a huge loss right there. But the Sharks are so impressive, because I know they were losing games and you're going, but look at Celebrini and look at what he's doing. But if you can have some reliable goaltending in there and Askarov proves he can play more, game changer.
Yeah.
6-on-5 goals. Like, we saw two against the Sabres last night. We're seeing quite a bit around the NHL. Is there a secret sauce to 6-on-5 and being able to have those opportunities now that teams are coming back, scoring late goals and then, you know, taking it to overtime?
Well, I know a lot of teams around the league have been pulling their goalies earlier for years now. So I would imagine if you're a team, knowing that's the trend, you're going to try to practice 6-on-5s more, because you know that you're going to be playing it for more than a minute, right? And I think we've seen some teams like Minnesota, what was it, 2 seasons ago? They were so incredible in 6-on-5 situations. They had so many comeback wins because of it. If you see other teams having success, you should have it. It is kind of interesting, though, because teams kind of have their units, and that's what they practice with. And you're seeing teams like, I don't know, the New York Rangers, where they're, you know, they're leaning on their younger players throughout much of the third period. And then the 6-on-5 comes around and they're like, we're going to put Zibanejad and Kreider back on the ice, because that's who generally practices it, not the guys like Hedl who helped get them to that point. So I wonder if teams are going to start learning from that as well, to try to get more players included in these practices, right? Because we're seeing more goalie pulls, more comeback wins. So maybe you need it that more players are ready to play in those situations. Like, I don't know. I wonder where it goes from here.
The Islanders were basically just content to play as close to 500 as possible until they got healthy. Now they're healthy and they've gone 2-6 with a healthy lineup. And Patrick Waugh says that he has no video evidence to support his claim, but they are playing well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brock Nelson has disappeared since just before the Four Nations announcement. No goals in over a month. What is happening and what may happen on the island, or will nothing happen and it'll just remain the island?
Nothing will happen, because that is the Islander way, right? Like, that is what it is.
Think of what Brock Nelson could have fetched last year at the deadline when he was posting another 30-goal season. And now what? He's just going to walk into UFA on a down year?
And here's the thing. If you were to trade him this year, you would get a killing for him, because there are teams out there that want centers. Toronto needs a center. I could see a lot of teams going out for... Look how much teams got for just okay centers last season, right? If Sean Monahan and Elias Lindholm in a down year and Adam Henrique are pulling in huge returns, what's someone actually good like Brock Nelson, who comes to play in the postseason, worth? Like, it would be so interesting if he were available, but Will he be? I mean, I understand the want to stay in the mix if you're the Islanders because you bet on this core to win right now, so you want to stick with that. And also, a lot of the Eastern Conference doesn't want that last wild card seed, so maybe you have a shot. But it reminds me of it was two seasons ago when you had guys like Mayfield they could have traded, and they probably could have gotten a lot for him because he was a cheap right-handed defenseman. They opted against it. They could have moved Zach Parise. They opted against it. They could have moved Varlamov. They opted against it, and they just started re-signing guys for more of the same. Like, that's the Islander way. When that was the prime opportunity to step back, kind of retool, right? Get some assets, flip them, go in the offseason and do that, and then push forward. Look at what the Capitals did a couple years ago. Like, look at how it's working out. And they just won't do it. It's the Lou Lamoriello way. If they go for anyone, I don't think they're going to sell. They're going to somehow buy. And they're going to buy someone that's been on a Lou Lamoriello team before, because that is what they do.
Let me ask you about goaltending and the Philadelphia Flyers, because they had signed Fedotov and is hurt, but it really hasn't worked good. And then this other kid came over this year, right, Kolosov, and you're like, oh, what is he like? And wasn't really good last night. Ersson has always seemed hurt. Are the Flyers a team to look for maybe a goalie movement at some point? And I'm saying this year or even into the offseason, because we saw some goalie movement already this season, and we started seeing it last summer. So you think the Flyers would be in the market for that?
I'm not sure if they're going to be, because, like, we don't see goalie movement enough. Obviously, this year we've had a couple trades. After, like, last year we were waiting for them all season, they didn't happen. But they committed to their goalies that they have. They added another one into the mix. That I wonder if they just know this is the vision, this is the process, just focus on it. And if you have to make a decision in the offseason, you do it. But let everyone develop and then figure it out instead of spending now. Obviously, having a good goalie can solidify a lot of things, right? And it can keep you in games maybe you don't belong to be in. And yes, that'll earn you extra points, which doesn't help if you're rebuilding, I guess. But, you know, it helps build that competitive environment. So I see why they should go for it, but I just don't think they're going to yet.
Which team is the next to make a big move, in your opinion?
I feel like I'm still waiting for someone like Dallas to make a move, because that second line, I know that White Johnson,
Matt, it's good now
together, but yeah. I'm a little bit worried if they're going to be enough to kind of power that top nine when the first line is not scoring at the capacity they need. And I don't think the Danoff is the answer there.
Yeah, well, they are. At the very least, in the last week, they've turned a corner. They look an awful lot better. But
does the Donovs still have a no trade clause? That's what
only to Anaheim. Only to Anaheim.
Only to Anaheim. Okay.
And obviously, there's some pretty significant depth there. Shayna, thank you. Enjoy the early action here in 2025, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me,
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. We'll wrap up Sabres Live after this.